Join us for a captivating new series where Lon sits down with the trailblazers of the music and entertainment world. Discover the stories behind the faces and voices that shape our culture and community.
We will bring you exclusive interviews with industry legends and rising stars. Behind the scenes insights and get a peek into the creative processes and personal journeys. Artists and performers and their upcoming shows and events.
Stay tuned for more updates and sneak peeks. Follow us on social media and subscribe to our channel.
Be bold. Why not? Season 3. Make your mark, lead with pride.
Arm yourself with courage. Stand out and rise above.
Be the leader that you can be.
Lead others with passion.
Join us as we chat with MJ. Be part of the conversation. Every Monday at 7 p.m. Central. Tuesday, 8 a.m. Philippines.
Ready for some real talk? Pink Table Talk is all about empowerment, entrepreneurship, and the vibrant stories that make the world go round. Don't miss out on the gems shared in this heart-to-heart session with Dr. Carly D. Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central Time.
Attention, food lovers. Get ready for a brand new culinary adventure with the Commissary Kitchen.
Join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Time or 9 a.m. in the Philippines for a live show that brings the best of the kitchen straight to your screen.
Presented by Lon Live Stream and Podcast and produced by Lon Media Network, we'll explore delicious recipes, share expert cooking tips, and bring you closer to the world of gourmet cuisine. The Commissary Kitchen, where every meal is an experience. See you there. Tune into Legal Treats with attorney Eileen Ligot Dizon every Friday at 8 p.m. Central Time.
Get your weekly dose of legal knowledge, especially on family matters like divorce, child custody, child support, estate planning, probate, and immigration.
Engage in discussions by posting your questions, comments, greetings, or shout-outs.
See you every Friday at 8 p.m. Central Time. That would be Saturday at 9 a.m. Philippines. Don't miss out.
In a world cluttered with information, where truth is power, Law & Weekly News stands apart.
We delve deeper, uncover facts, and bring stories to light. From political showdowns and economic triumphs to the pulse of the street and the heart of the community.
We capture the moments that define us, stories that challenge, inspire, and transform.
Tune in live Sundays, 8 a.m. Central Standard Time, and Sundays, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Are you ready for engaging conversations on education, teaching strategies, trends in the classroom?
Tune in to Teacher Talk, Live Chickahan, with your hosts, Teacher Cora and Dr. Claire.
In each episode, we'll dive into meaningful discussions, share insights, and connect with fellow educators.
Don't miss out on the fun and camaraderie. Grab your coffee and join us for some lively Chickahan. Every Saturday, 9 a.m. Central Time. 10 p.m. Philippines.
Lawin Media Network.
Bringing to you the most relevant content across all platforms.
Business, legal, politics, health, lifestyle, and entertainment.
Your source for all the news and updates in the greater Houston community from Texas and all over the world.
Get informed and empowered with Lawin Media Network.
The following program is produced by Lawin Media Network. The views and opinions expressed in this program are solely those of the individuals appearing on the show and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Lawin Media Network, its affiliates, sponsors, or partners. The content provided in this program is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Lawin Media Network does not guarantee the accuracy, completeness, or timeliness of the information.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Pink Table Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Carly D., a doctorally prepared nurse, educator, mentor, mother, and domestic violence survivor. Thank you all for joining us tonight. You're either watching us live on our YouTube channel or Facebook Live page. The show is produced by Lawin Media Network, and we're also available on over 15 different podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Amazon, and Google. So thank you all for joining us tonight. Tonight we have a phenomenal guest who will be joining us shortly. Our guest tonight is our first male of the season. All of our guests previously have been female, so he is our first male guest this year. So our guest is Dr. Toby Brooks. He has an amazing background, and he's doing some amazing things. So I'll tell you guys a little bit about Dr. Brooks. He is a dreamer, learner, and doer. He currently serves as the director of the Academy for Teaching and Learning, and he is also a clinical professor in the Department of Health, Human Performance, and Recreation at Baylor University. In addition to teaching, research, service, and mentorship, he is a student and cultivator of leadership. Today, his purpose is to help others discover and pursue their dreams. He has published more than 20 books. He has 20 peer-reviewed articles and over 200 plus magazine articles in his diverse career. He's an athletic trainer, professor, graphic artist, and a journalist. And he also has his own weekly podcast called Becoming Undone, where he looks at how high achievers can transform from falling apart to falling into place. And it's rated in the top 10% of all shows globally after only 18 months of production. He is also a husband, father of two, and he enjoys reading, writing, lifting weights, running, playing basketball, playing the drums, and relentlessly pursuing better every day. What an amazing, amazing person. And so I'm so happy to welcome Dr. Toby Brooks to the show. Welcome, Dr. Toby.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. D. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to have you here. I think you have such an amazing and diverse background. And I think what you are doing is truly inspiring. Like I said, you're my first male guest. So well, what an honor.
I'll apologize up front. I should have worn a hot pink shirt just to go with the theme, but yellow will have to suffice tonight.
Yeah, that's fine. It's still bright. So we're fans of yellow here.
I guess technically Baylor gold. So,
yeah, there you go. Yeah, we have to go with Baylor gold. I love that. So thank you so much for coming. I wanted to know a little bit more about yourself, a little bit more about your background, how you got started. Can you tell our audience that?
Yeah, love to. I grew up in a rural part of Southern Illinois, kind of middle of nowhere. First generation college student. My biggest, wildest dreams were probably to go to a community college. A four-year school was a pipe dream, and a private school was an impossibility. So the fact that God has led me to serve as a leader at Baylor University is nothing other than a God thing to me, because there's no way I could have ended up here as a student. Grew up on a farm, learned kind of blue-collar work ethic. My dad was a mechanic in a coal mine. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And just learned the value of working hard. And always loved sports, wanted to play college basketball. And that really wasn't in the cards for me. So I did the next best thing and pursued a career in sports medicine. I became a certified athletic trainer after graduating from SIU Carbondale and went to Arizona, where I became a graduate assistant there for 3 years, working with gymnastics and football and a little bit with baseball. But through it, pardon me, through it all, my long-term goal was to work in the NFL major Division I college sports. I had an opportunity to do that with the then Oakland Raiders, now Las Vegas Raiders. Spent some time with USA Baseball. And really, I loved that part of life, but the hours were incredibly long. The pay wasn't that good. And I was on staff traveling when my daughter, who was less than a year at the time, I missed her first steps while I was traveling with football. And it was really kind of a wake-up call for me that pursuing that goal didn't really align with my goals as a dad and as a husband. So pivoted hard. I had my PhD, decided to go all in higher ed and to teach athletic training and sports medicine and strength conditioning. And so have largely been doing that ever since. So the move to Baylor is a bit of a shift for me because I've gotten more experienced and, you know, older, mentoring young faculty members has become something that I really have loved to do. So in my role here at Baylor as the director of the Academy for Teaching and Learning, I get to do that most every day, but I still get to teach. So it really has been a tremendous journey and one where I've been blessed to interact with the story of incredible achievers who have faced unimaginable odds sometimes, whether it's injury or loss or death of loved ones and family members, that kind of thing. And they still manage to turn that into something good and be higher achieving even than they were before that setback. So that was really kind of the long answer to the story, but that's where Becoming Undone really got its start, was being inspired by people who have incredible stories and wanting to tell those stories to inspire other people.
Wow, that's so awesome. And it's so amazing, you know, and it's kind of the inspiration for my show as well. I've had a lot of guests here who have overcome some severe obstacles in their life, whether it was personal, health, relational, or legal battles. But somehow they've made it through and come out on the other end better and giving back. So they're trying to like pay it forward. So, you know, I always love hearing those type of stories and seeing what people do with that. You know, it's not just going through a hardship, but it's actually making something better to come out of it. So it's so amazing that we share that.
Absolutely.
Yes. So looking back at your experiences with being athletic trainer, you know, seeing those injuries, seeing those, you know, those wins as well. Is there any particular experience that stands out to you the most over those years?
Yeah, I share this story frequently. Prior to here, I worked at a state institution and I taught a course in kind of psychosocial aspects of injury, kind of the mental health and sports psychology side of things. And I had a student athlete who was an incredibly high achieving, she was an alternate for the Olympic team as a gymnast and just missed out on making the Olympic team. She was a 4.0 pre-med student. She actually went on and became an orthopedic surgeon. But when I encountered her, she was, I can't describe her as any other way than just sad. She seemed to be, you know, from the outsider's perspective looking in, incredible achiever, like world class, like literally, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of little girls that aspire to be Olympic gymnasts. And at that time, seven of them got to do it and she was eighth. and just the heartbreak from falling just short haunted her into her college and later her adulthood. And so, like, wow. I said, a 4.0 pre-med student at Arizona, went on to become an orthopedic surgeon, and sadly she took her life. She was so haunted by what she wasn't or how she fell short at the age of 14 that she couldn't shake it. And so with that, I mean, as tragic as that is, it was really a wake-up call for me, because it's easy to look at someone's resume or their vita and say, this person has it all together. You know, on paper, she was world-class in everything she had ever tried to do. But I distinctly remember, she had lots of injuries. She was tough as nails, one of the toughest athletes I ever worked with, had a debilitating back injury, spondylolisthesis, but was still competing as a gymnast. And so we worked together daily. And one day I was just trying to, you know, forge a patient, a clinician relationship with her, have a conversation. And I said, hey, you know, your name, stated her by name, said, how would you describe yourself in one word? And without hesitation, she said, failure. Heavens, if you're a failure, what are the rest of us, you know?
Yeah.
So it was jarring as a clinician to hear someone who is that accomplished view themselves through that lens. And it really made me realize that I can't make assumptions about my patients. I can't make assumptions about my students. I can't make assumptions about my colleagues. I really need to check in with them. And just because the world would say they're high achievers, they might not necessarily share that sentiment.
Yes. Wow. That's such a touching story, you know, and it's just so heartbreaking to hear that, you know, she would, unalive herself. It's just really unfortunate. Do you think there's a lot of pressure being put on young athletes in this day and age?
Absolutely. And things are changing, definitely. When I was in college, there was no name, image, and likeness. Transfer portal didn't exist. Athletes, particularly now we see in the so-called revenue sports, they're professionals. They're making six figures. There's a softball player at Texas Tech who just signed $1 million NIL deal, $1.2 million to play college softball.
Wow.
And as great as that is, and as much as I celebrate and applaud the athletes getting what they deserve, frankly. I mean, universities have made millions off the backs of unpaid athletes for years, and disproportionately student athletes of color. And so as great as it is that NIL is a thing and that athletes are finally getting what they deserve, frankly, it also comes with it's just freighted with expectations, with criticism in the media. For years, high school and even college athletes were kind of absolved from some of that criticism that pro athletes might get. And now it's just as nasty, and the scrutiny with which they are under, the personal attacks that they face on social media, it's just relentless. And so I think the mental health care aspect of sports medicine it's grown tremendously since I was actively working as a college athletic trainer, but it's still lacking in many respects. The coping skills, dealing with the anxiety and the depression and those aspects, these are still developmentally, you know, frontal cortex doesn't really start to lock in and to solidify till 23, 24, 25. And these are 18-year-olds living with this kind of pressure, and they're just not equipped for it.
Wow. It's amazing. And it's so true, you know, and it's heartbreaking when you hear, you know, these types of stories, because for them, you know, from us looking on the outside, we feel like they're so successful. They're living the American dream. But it's sad to see that they don't feel the same, that they have this sort of imposter syndrome that they're experiencing.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yes. So this is such a great topic, and we're just starting to dive in with Dr. Brooks. So we're going to go for our first commercial break, and we'll be back with Dr. Brooks. So everybody stay tuned. Welcome back to Pink Table Talk. Tonight we have Dr. Toby Brooks with us, athletic trainer, journalist, professor, and all-around amazing human being. Before we went on the break, we were talking about the mental health of athletes. So Dr. Brooks, how do you think we can best support the mental health of these young athletes who, in my opinion, they are high achievers, they are successful, they are the epitome, you know, of success. How can we as a society best support them?
That's a great question. And it's one that I have to give credit where credit is due. The younger generation gets it in a way my generation did not, to see Olympic athletes pull themselves from competition because psychologically they weren't ready. When that happened initially with Simone Biles, in the back of my mind, my upbringing made me think, she's weak. Like, how could someone go to the Olympics and not compete? But over time, that initial response I realized was kind of a toxic viewpoint where toughness is manifest in a lot of different ways. And for a gymnast, if they don't know where they are in space, they can land on their neck and die. Like that's a very real thing. So there's wisdom in her pulling herself out. And what we saw in the most recent games where she was all in and she was world class and the greatest of all time, no doubt about it. And so there's been a pretty dramatic destigmatization of seeking mental health care, having a counselor, going through mental training. You know, you ask just about any athlete, they'll say, you know, what percentage of your performance is mental? And for years, they would say, you know, it's at worst, they'd say 50-50. Many would say 90-10 or 80-20 mental versus physical. And then you'd ask them, well, what's your training look like? And it's 100% physical. And so athletes today, I think, get this. And to a certain extent, sports medicine has come alongside. For example, when I was at Arizona, we had one person who was not a licensed counselor, but worked as what was called a peak performance consultant, basically a sports psychologist. Today, I believe they staff six people and athletes can come and go. There's also essentially a wellness program where student athletes can go off campus and receive counseling. And we see employers do that too. As a new employee at Baylor, we're entitled to five EAP visits at no cost. So access is better. The stigma that was there is less. And I know I'm the first guy you've had this season, but I think for males, it's particularly troublesome because the idea that you're a strong man, particularly black men, the thought that a black man would go seek counseling is somehow freighted with this notion of weakness. And it's not, you know, the strength it takes for a man to admit that they need help and are going to seek out coping strategies from a trained professional. I've been a late adopter to it. I'll be honest. I have not historically sought out counseling, but I see the wisdom in it. If I'm going to train my body and, you know, if I sprained my ankle or broke a bone in my leg, I would go to an orthopedist without question. Yes. But if I'm depressed, like, oh, I can gut this out. You know, I'm not going to limp around on that broken tibia, but I'll be sad for 6 months. And how stupid is that? You know, trust in our healthcare providers who are trained professionals. And it's taken me, sadly, longer than I care to admit, but I think student athletes get that better than my generation did.
Yes, I think so. I think we definitely are coming out of that generation of stigmatizing, you know, mental health care. I think even growing up, you know, we never talked about it. You know, we didn't talk about depression. We didn't talk about anxiety. You know, it was so taboo. You know, if you told somebody you were sad, it was like, oh, what's wrong with this person? You know, like, what are you being sad for? Just knock it off, you know, shake it off.
Right.
But we see especially with the high rates of people, you know, unaliving themselves, we see that it really is something that is needed, you know, something that needs to be addressed. I do like the fact that jobs, employers are offering now like EAP and counseling services, especially students and universities. They definitely need mental health counseling and check-ins. You know, there's a lot of stress and pressure for young people today. And then when you add, you know, athletics and training on top of it, I think that just it overwhelms them. It pushes them over that edge. So I'm glad that we're coming out of that. And, you know, just like you said with Simone Biles, you know, she talked about it. She became the face for that. And I think it helped other people to realize that it's OK to not be OK. And, yeah. You know, you should seek help. Struggle.
For sure.
Yes. So you have a show, a podcast called Becoming Undone. Can you tell us about the concept behind that show? What made you want to do a podcast related to that topic?
Yeah, love this question, because as much as I love my job, if I could find a way to make Becoming Undone pay the bills, I would do it all day, every day, because this, I've heard the inspiration that it's put into my spirit. It's just, whether anyone listens or not, I will continue to do the show. But it all started during COVID. And as I said, I teach a behavioral health class. And so we had pivoted to online only. I had a class of 20 masters of athletic training students. And so trying to be creative and innovative, I convened a panel discussion of former student athletes that I'd worked with and a couple of former colleagues. So there were six or seven. And we all got together, and I just had those student athletes, now professionals, I mean, they were in their 30s and early 40s, talk about what their transition out of sport was like. And I was blown away. These are people who are highly successful professionals, and they're reflecting back on an experience that happened 12, 15, 20 years ago. One guy in particular, he's a successful manager in minor league baseball now, and he broke down into tears and was just beside himself. He said, I never took the time. He got cut from a minor league team. He had been drafted into the St. Louis Cardinals organization, played a few years, and eventually kind of made his way out of professional baseball. But he got cut from a team in South Dakota, and he drove home straight away from South Dakota to Arizona. And he said, I didn't listen to the radio. I didn't say a word. I didn't pick up my phone. I didn't call anybody. It was like 18 straight hours of silence, just thinking about how my career is over. Baseball had been central to his entire identity, his whole life. As long as he could remember, the only thing he knew he wanted to be was a baseball player. And that had been taken from him. And I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. And he was just gripped with this idea of now what? He was undone. In that moment, he was falling apart. He was in pieces. And it doesn't have to be being cut from a baseball team. It could be domestic abuse. It could be losing your job. It could be not getting into that school you wanted. But you are shattered. You are undone. You're in pieces.
Yes.
And some people, that shattering wounds them irreparably for the rest of their life, and they never recover. Mm. And for the high achiever, in that moment, or in those moments that follow, somehow they manage to pull it all together. And it ends up being part of like their origin story that turns into this success. And so, you know, we look at some of the most successful entrepreneurs of our time. They had several failed businesses before they invented whatever it was. You know, Walt Disney famously was a failure, had been fired. And you can look at so many people who society would say are elite, they're celebrities, they're world-class athletes, they failed. They missed the podium. They didn't measure up. And so I was just gripped with this idea. I emerged from that panel discussion, and I probably got way more out of it than my students did. I hope they got a lot out of it. But I was just moved to the point that these are stories people need to hear.
Yes. Because
frequently, these are stories that people don't get asked to tell.
Yes.
The stigma says, I'm going to focus on the success. I'm going to ignore or pretend the failure never happened because failures fail. No, successful people fail their way to success.
Yes.
So for me, I recognized in that moment, okay, I've got to line up people I know who fit this bill. And then hopefully over time, it will grow to the point where I can connect and reach out and have something of value to offer people who I don't know. And over time, it's grown. And I've had the blessings and the honor of interviewing former Navy SEALs, former NBA NFL players, Olympians, Grammy and Emmy award-winning artists. I mean, some great people that had done incredible things, and they've got a story to tell, but far too often people don't ask. And yeah. you don't want to sit down and introduce yourself and tell people about your failures. But this is a new for me to get to ask that question, and we get to learn from it.
Yes. Oh, that's so awesome. And it's so amazing, you know. And that's what I said was the inspiration behind, you know, my show here was just these inspiring stories, you know, these people that have overcome some severe challenges in their lives and, you know, they made something out of it. They didn't just stay there. You know, a lot of times we can have something hit us so hard in life and we could just lay there. And you got two options. You can lay there on the ground and die. You can get up and keep on living. And so for a lot of even my guests, they had to make that choice and they chose to live. And so I love hearing those types of stories and seeing people come through their messes. So, you know, they say God takes our mess and makes a message. So yeah, I love that.
Absolutely.
Before we go on our break, what do you think is that key ingredient that the high achievers have that takes them from that failure to success?
That's a great question. And I'm a qualitative researcher by training. And so much of this is qualitative research. And so if I look at 97 episodes and look at the trends, what I see without question, it's not necessarily about capability. It's not gifts that we were born with. It's not training or privileges perhaps that we had. It's just this iron-willed persistence and refusal to let a bad chapter be the end of the story. And these people are willing to understand that this is working its way into my story to form me and prepare me. I oftentimes use a metaphor of a cliff. If you've been to like the rec center, they'll have a climbing wall and it's got the handles that are bolted to it. Without stories and without failure, lots of times people that I hope to inspire, they just see me as a slippery wall. There's nothing they can connect with. If everything I touch turned to gold and everything was successful, there's no connection there. But if I've got failures or adversities or setbacks or things that didn't go according to plan, they can hear that in my story and be like, wow, if that person did it, I can do it too. It's an inspiring way of helping me be better because someone else showed me the way ahead of time. So that resilience is key. You don't necessarily have to know how the story is going to unfold. And for the believer, you have to understand that, okay, there's a plan being worked here and I don't have to know it. But if I trust in God's providence, then I have to trust that the verse I always look at is, it's a lamp unto my feet. I want that 1 million megawatt power shining miles and miles down the road, but I get a lamp unto my feet. That's just enough to see the next step.
Yeah.
So these people, they didn't necessarily know how it was going to end. They just trusted that today I'm going to be better than I was yesterday. I'm going to do what I can to be better. And I root it to Luke 2:52. Jesus grew in wisdom, stature, favor with God and man, mental, physical, spiritual, social. If I can work on that more often than not, I'm going to grow in the right direction and I'm going to be better. And that's really all I can aim for. If I'm better every day, by the end of my life, I'll be a heck of a lot better than I would have been had I just been willing to stay down.
Wow. Amazing. Oh, thank you so much for that, Dr. Brooks. That's so amazing and inspiring for our audience. We're going to take another break, but stay tuned for more with Dr. Brooks.
In a world filled with fleeting moments, there's beauty waiting to be captured. My name is Christian, and I specialize in immortalizing your most precious memories. from elegant weddings to vibrant events and timeless portraits. I'm here to make every moment unforgettable. Let me tell your story through the lens. Contact me today and let's create magic together.
In a world cluttered with information, where truth is power, Law & Weekly News stands apart.
We delve deeper, uncover facts, and bring stories to light. From political showdowns and economic triumphs to the pulse of the street and the heart of the community,
we capture the moments that define us, stories that challenge, inspire, and transform.
Tune in live Sundays, 8 a.m. Central Standard Time, and Sundays, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Welcome back to Pink Table Talk. We have such an amazing episode tonight with Dr. Toby Brooks. Before we left, we were talking about overcoming challenges. So Dr. Brooks, have you overcome any challenges in your own life?
That's a good question. And I guess I have to put my money where my mouth is because I just talked about how people don't like to talk about their failures. Probably the one that stands out in my mind, like I said, first generation college student, wasn't ready, frankly, for a four-year school, or I couldn't have afforded it even if I were. But I wanted to be a physical therapist, and I hadn't even heard about athletic training at the time. I went to a tiny high school, so we didn't have any medical care of any sort. And so I'm in a Calc 1 class that's basically pre-med, pre-physical therapy, pre-health professions. And I had earned an 89 the semester before in pre-cal, and the professor rounded me up to an A. He was kind enough to do that. And in the spring semester, I was really struggling with Calc 1. It was probably one of the harder classes I had had up to that point. And I went in for some added work, went into his office hours to get some help. And in conversation, he said, just real stoic and quiet, soft-spoken guy, he said, Mr. Brooks, what's your major? And I said, well, I'm pre-physical therapy, maybe pre-med, haven't really decided yet. And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, well, what are you going to change it to? And I didn't really know what he was saying. And I said, pardon me? And he said, well, you're going to get at best a B in this class, probably a C. And so that's not going to happen. And it was really the first time anyone had been frank and honest with me and told me what I wasn't going to do. And I'd love to tell you that I pulled my neck in that moment and said, I'll show you. But I didn't. I cowered. I buckled under that. And I went looking for what else I could do. Instead of standing my ground, digging in my heels, I just basically accepted it. It's that old Carol Dweck idea of the growth mindset says, if you challenge me, I'll rise to the challenge. The fixed mindset says, if I'm good enough, I will. And if I wasn't born smart enough, I won't. And that was really where I was at that time. And so it really changed the trajectory of my life. I won't say that it was for the worse because I trust in the providence. But if I had it to do over, that moment would look differently. That grade would be different. And it made me realize as an educator, just a simple word spoken probably innocently. He wasn't trying to wound me to my core, but he did. And so as a professor in a classroom, I have to understand my students are coming in with family obligations, financial pressures, grade stresses. They're trying to get into graduate and professional programs. And what I say to them in a moment might resonate in their ear and in their heart for the rest of their life. And so it really changed how I approach it. And it's a reminder to me that lots of times what I experienced that maybe I wouldn't have chosen, maybe the reason for that is so someone else doesn't have to. So the hopes that that next generation of healthcare provider or college student can have a better experience than I had.
It's so true. You know, you're so true in what you said, that a word, you know, can last for a lifetime. You know, as an educator myself, I always do my best to try to encourage and motivate my students. But the impact of a word, it can truly make or break somebody. And I think that's why it's important for us to be very mindful in what we say to others. Because it's like planting a seed, you know, you can plant a seed for someone to flourish or for somebody to break down. But it seems that in your case, it kind of helped you to get back on your feet and perhaps change your plans with education.
Yeah, it was a redirection, and I don't resent it. I don't look back on that. I mean, it hurt in the moment, but it was something that I probably needed at that time. More recently, I was a full professor at a state school, tenured and fairly comfortable. And I really felt the need to make a pivot and to shift into helping other faculty members. And it's one of those deals where you don't have the experience, so you can't get the job, but you can't get the job to get the experience. So I was kind of stuck in this cycle of suck where jobs that I knew I would enjoy, they were saying I was unqualified for. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find a way to get qualified for them because no one would give me a chance. And so, you know, countless job applications that I thought I was well suited for are left unanswered. And you know, people are like, oh, it's easy to apply. Use the easy apply on LinkedIn. There were probably hundreds of those that I clicked and never heard a word, wasn't even open. Or emails, or you know, crafting cover letters and vitas. It really made me question who I was and what I was capable of, because I can't emerge from that as feeling anything other than they looked at me and they considered me less than someone else, and that haunted me for a good long while. And I've struggled with, God, what is your plan? Where am I supposed to be? Because this sucks. Like being rejected after rejected after rejected. I was, like I said, first generation college student. I got my PhD. Like in my mind, that's the best you can do. Like, of course people are going to hire you. And that ain't how it is. It is competitive out there. And you have a degree just like most everybody else does. You've got to set yourself apart in other ways. So I had a guest on who was a prolific researcher. He was one of my PhD students at Texas Tech and had gone on. He'd graduated and was working, and COVID happened and he basically lost his job overnight. He had 30 peer-reviewed publications, 15 or 20 more in the works, and he's unemployed. And so he faces this. He's one of my guests as well. And as I'm interviewing him, he says, I decided in that moment, I'll have next year at this time, I don't just want to be a year older, I want to be a year better. So he looked, signed up for, and started on an online MBA program. And in that moment, I felt that conviction. And I said, that's what I've got to do. If I want to make this jump to the next level, I can't control who interviews me, but I can control getting an MBA. I can make myself better as an administrator with more education. And so that podcast episode ended up costing me a year and 2 months of my life and $15,000 and lots of tests and lots of classes, but I got my MBA. And through that process, it showed me what it's like to be an online student in 2024. And it showed me how professors can either facilitate online instruction or absolutely obliterate it just simply by how they set up their course. And so that rejection prepared me to be better in my job today, because it steered me toward a degree I wouldn't have otherwise done. So I don't resent it. In retrospect, I wouldn't have had it any other way.
Oh, wow. That's so amazing. You know, and I love that, you know, because you see that as a redirection. You know, you took that rejection as a redirection and it helped you go into your purpose. I often think that that's sometimes how God works in our lives. We often will be like, oh, God, why did you let this bad thing happen to me? Or why I didn't get that job? Or, you know, maybe they failed the class. But sometimes it's actually being done for a reason and for a purpose makes us stronger, better. Like, for instance, you know, you got the MBA and that does help you to stand out above other candidates. So I think that's so important that we can take those wrong turns in life and turn them right. So that's so amazing that you did that. Also, you mentioned something about, you know, all the rejections and with the applications, you know, that's a movement now where they're trying to not ghost applicants And I think that's so important, you know, because I think when you don't hear anything, you kind of start thinking in your head, like, what was wrong with me? You know, you're like, did I not have good qualifications? Did they see my LinkedIn picture? Did they not like my picture? You know, you start going through all these scenarios in your head and you're just like, what was it? So I think it's important that companies do at least send you something, you know, some response.
Yeah, there's a humanity. There is definitely a humanity to the process. And
yes,
I would have, and I don't know, some jobs they might get hundreds or even thousands of applicants and they can't do this, but there were some jobs that I really thought I was a good fit for that I got just that. And so I reached out to some mentors. I said, hey, don't just pat me on the head and say, this looks great. I want your unvarnished, honest assessment. And having a mentor that you can trust who will give you that kind of difficult feedback. You know, the easy thing for me to say, and I love this, Brene Brown talks about this, how nice is nasty and clarity is kindness.
Yes.
And you can be nice to me and say, you know, you look good. There's no I don't know why you're not getting these jobs. When you look and you're like, well, you changed four jobs in 3 years. And I'm just using that as an example. But someone that gives you that honest, clear feedback, that is so much more valuable than just the pat on the head and the patronizing, you're fine, you know, just wait, be patient, trust, and those types of things. So it's critical to have those kinds of people that can speak some truth, but it's not always comfy.
Yes. Those uncomfortable truths, they truly help us to see ourselves and to see what areas that we can improve on. I think it's very valuable for anybody who is hoping to be successful or reach that next level. And whatever they're doing, whether they're starting a business, have a business, or they're in their career, you have to have that honest feedback. And you have to have somebody like a mentor who can provide you with that honest feedback. It's so important for your growth and development. And that's what helps you actually reach that next level. Yeah. I'm going to read a few comments from our audience. We have MJ Versosa. She says, very inspiring story, Dr. Brooks. Great job, Dr. Carly. And then she also says, rejections or failures are part of God's setup for our purpose in life. Yes, that's so true. Thank you so much, MJ, for watching. We're going to go on our last break of the evening, and then we're going to come back to finish up with Dr. Brooks. Thank you, guys, and stay tuned.
Join us for a captivating new series where Lon sits down with the trailblazers of the music and entertainment world. Discover the stories behind the faces and voices that shape our culture and community.
We will bring you exclusive interviews with industry legends and rising stars. Behind-the-scenes insights and get a peek into the creative processes and personal journeys. Artists and performers and their upcoming shows and events.
Stay tuned for more updates and sneak peeks. Follow us on social media and subscribe to our channel.
Welcome back to Pink Table Talk. We're here with our wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Toby Brooks. So during this evening, Dr. Brooks, in our conversation tonight, I noticed that you have an amazing faith in God. Can you tell us, how does your faith in God fit into all of your professional endeavors and all of your business ventures?
Yeah, great question. I spent the bulk of my career working in state-affiliated institutions, whether that was where I went to undergrad. I spent one semester at a private school and quickly found out I couldn't afford that in undergrad. transfer back to a state school in grad school, all at the state level. And so I always felt like there was part of me that I couldn't just be 100% authentic about. More so as a student, you can speak your truth as a student, but particularly as an employee, as a staff member at the various universities where I worked, just felt like, you know, if I had a student that was struggling, I would have loved to have told them, "Hey, I'm praying for you," or you know, anything related to faith. And you always kind of felt like I could probably go there, it'd probably be safe, but as a state employee, I probably ought not. So it just always felt like there was, you know, a percentage of me that I couldn't authentically be. And so it's one of the reasons why being at Baylor has been liberating in so many ways. And I'll be honest with you, Carly, the job search took its toll on my faith for sure. I really questioned the provision for me. And I thought, I've done all this and I've, you know, no one in my family had ever gotten a degree, and I got five of them, and I still am not finding a job. I know I have a purpose, but I'm not being given a chance to live it out. And my faith wavered mightily. And recently, you know, this was within the past couple of years. And so, you know, just kind of managed to kind of slog through it. And there's just no other way to explain this position than God's timing and will. Our youngest, our son, just graduated from high school. If I would have gotten those jobs I was applying for, we would have had to uproot him in the middle of his high school career. That wouldn't have been good. He had a great community around him and now has a great community at his, he's now a freshman in college, and many of the friends that he made there in high school are there with him. So I don't have any doubts. So the timing was all wrong, but my ego and my frail sense of self needed the external affirmation of someone giving me a job interview, and it just wasn't the right time. And so this has been a refreshing reminder that God's got me right where he wants me. I have to trust that. I don't have to know, again, the lamp unto my feet. I can't see the path as it goes over the horizon, but I can see the next step. And it's allowed me to kind of have a rejuvenated faith and a trust that you're just being a petulant little child. You were pouting, you weren't getting your way, and you were mad at God about it. And that's no way to be. I can't say I'm getting better every day if my faith is an aspect of my personhood that's dying. I have to cultivate that.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's so amazing. You know, and I feel some of that too. You know, I'm pretty accomplished and I have, you know, this great educational background, great professional experience, plus extras, you know, organizations and volunteer work. But I too, it took me about 2 years to find the position that I really, really wanted. So I can understand, you know, that struggle and your experience of that. And you do start questioning, you're like, God, why? What's going on? You know, am I not good enough yet? You know? So I could definitely relate to you with that. We do have a question from one of our audience members, from Brian Wong. He says, interesting conversation. My question is, how can faculty and staff create a more supportive environment for students facing severe crisis? Great question, Brian. I'm going to let Dr. Brooks answer that.
Yeah, that is a great question. One thing I started doing since COVID is a daily check-in in my classes. So it's just a real simple 4 or 5 question poll everywhere poll. I flash the QR code in the front of the room. Or if it's online, it's the first slide. And it's an anonymous survey, but it asks, you know, just like Likert scales, how are you feeling physically today? How are you feeling mentally today? Is there anything I could help you with? And again, it's anonymous. And there have been some times where I want it to be that way because I want them to feel like they can share. But it also gives me some awareness. And frankly, the story I shared about the student athlete who took her own life was partially like an inspiration for this. I may have students struggling in my midst that I don't know it. So I want to at least ask the question, and then the results show up in kind of like a heat map, and it's anonymized, so they don't know who said what. But if there's anything that's a red flag, I will stop class at that moment and say, if any of you need to talk, even right now, we can do that. But by all means, come talk to me after class. It's just a constant reinforcement that someone cares and they're willing and ready to listen if you're willing and ready to share. So that's one actionable step that I've taken. And I've also taken to emailing them, just kind of class emails, check-in emails much more frequently than I used to. Just words of encouragement, reminders, and transparency about what's coming up in the class, or just being as clear as I can be, so that it's not that I want to remove all of the stress of academics from their life, because stress makes things stronger, but that's I want great. Them to be fully informed, and I don't want them to have distress as a result of my course. And so I think that's important as well.
Yes. Oh, that's so amazing, Dr. Brooks. I know for myself too, you know, as a professor, I have checked in with my students as well, you know, and I always offer that listening ear, whether it's after class or whether, you know, they want to email me. I always try to make myself available, and I always ask them, how are you doing? You know, it's not just, okay, I know we have this test or we're studying for these exams, but how are you? So I always like to try to check in with my students and be there and lead them to any resources, depending upon what they may be going through.
Right.
So we have another question from our audience member. Buns Desco says, how can we encourage students to seek help without feeling stigmatized?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you alluded to that. And something that we've taken to do in my previous employment, it was actually in a health sciences center. So it was essentially attached to a functioning level one trauma center hospital. And so on-site counseling there 24/7. And so if we had a student in crisis, I would go with them. Hey, can I go with you? Can we go get this taken care of? You know, get you some help right now. And in years past, or even my generation, at best, the professor might have said, hey, you need to go get some help. And that was it. That was the end of it. I'm going to hold your hand and walk you physically in the door and be there for the handoff. I believe in it that much that I have an obligation, because heaven forbid if I tell you to go get help and you don't, and the unthinkable happens.
Yes.
That was preventable in my mind. And certainly my own experiences with this student athlete, she was years beyond my care, but I'm still haunted with what could I have done when she was 18 to 20, you know, 20 to 22 years old that might have helped prevented that. And so that tragedy sparked a change within me where I want my students to know I've got your back. Pardon me. I've got your back. I will physically and emotionally support you through this. And I think they recognize that. I think the students are, as we talked about earlier, the stigma is much less than it was to begin with. And the fact that people in positions of power are willing, ready, and able to go there with them, I think reinforces that.
Yes. Oh, that's so amazing, Dr. Brooks. And your students are really blessed to truly have somebody like you to walk with them through these crises or through those moments.
I'll interrupt you right there. I appreciate that sentiment, but I'm the one that's blessed. You know how it is. I get more from teaching than they get from being a student. And they speak life into me.
Yes. No, it is definitely true. And, you know, people always ask me why I love teaching. And it's like, well, I'm getting energy too. I'm feeling young too, you know. It's definitely a transference, you know, where it's a two-way street, you know. So I like to pour into them as they are also pouring into me. So I think that's really wonderful. We have another comment from Brian Wong. He says, thank you, Dr. Brooks, and more power to your show. Thank you so much, Brian Wong, for watching us live tonight. Before we go, Dr. Brooks, what's next for you? Anything new coming up?
That's a great question. And that's the curse of the high achiever is you get to the mountaintop and then you're like, well, where am I going next, right? And I'm sure you can relate to that. I'm really thrilled to be at Baylor. This community is invigorating. The energy here is tremendous. The team that I work with is just incredible. The students are tremendous as well. So I'm excited to really lean into this new role. I'm also really hopeful and working toward building my show so that I'm not doing it to be famous. I'm doing it to hopefully have impact, to leave a legacy, to make a difference in people's lives. And the only way that happens is if people listen. So doing my best to grow in the business of podcasting. It's like three different businesses. You got to be good on the production side. You got to have inspiring and good guests. You've also got to be good on the production side. It needs to be something that people can listen to. And then you got to market it. So having a podcast tells me a lot about you, my friend, in that you're willing to struggle through some things and learn how to be better at interviewing and how to be better at marketing and how to be better at production. And kudos to you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Can we put Dr. Brooks's podcast information up so that you guys can also tune into his show, Becoming Undone?
Yeah, and it's on all the major podcasts. Wherever you get your podcast, it's there. But that website will take you to where you can watch some watch and or listen to them natively as well.
Oh, so wonderful. Thank you so much again, Dr. Brooks, for coming on my show. It's been an absolute honor. I really appreciate you, and you've given our audience such an amazing and inspiring show tonight. Thank you, everybody, for watching Pink Table Talk on Lawin Media Network. Every Wednesday, we are live at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Remember, on Wednesdays, we talk pink, and you can sit with us. Everybody have a good night. Thank you again for joining us. Bye-bye.